This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. We have lots to do, but it is a Monday and it is the spring, so we're going to start off with UL baseball coach Matt Deggs. How was, coach, did you survive the trip to South Carolina?
Oh, yeah. We got back yesterday afternoon, and everybody's doing great, man. Ready to get going this week.
Well, you know, you said it many weeks ago, and I agree, especially after the great start that y'all were off of, got on in conference play. The thought process is don't get swept on the road and make – and, you know – win at home, and you didn't get swept, but man, when you were up 10-6, it was so tantalizingly close to win that series.
No doubt about it, Kevin. I mean, Friday night was a disaster. Just no other way to put it. We, six errors, I don't know how many walks, probably seven, and a ton of strikeouts offensively, and so that was the message going into the next day is, look, if they didn't beat us, we actually gave it to them in every phase. They had eight hits on the day. We had seven. So all we got to do is play better baseball, and we're going to have two good games today. And, come from behind in the eighth on the first game Saturday and, just come out really good in that last third. It was the second game of a doubleheader. It's the last game of the series. And hitting to a double play, man, after we scored. And that's a big play right there in the first inning. We're about to score two or three, and we get into a double play. And then we start the free passes again. And all you got to do is give that group over there a little bit of life, talking about Coastal, because their lineup's super dangerous. And unfortunately, we did that. We were battling at the plate all day, able to run several balls out the ballpark. And you're right. When it was 10-6, I thought, here we go. And, credit them. They never went away and found a way to get it done. It was a great series. And I'm sure we'll be seeing them again in the tournament.
So, there are so many fascinating scenarios that came up over the weekend. And one of them was, You had Brown, who's just, having this great game. Of course, he's got good hitters before him or after him. What goes into, do I pitch at this guy because he's hot, or do I challenge the guy behind him who's also really a good hitter? Like, what goes into those decisions?
Just gut feel and, sometimes some numbers. I mean, Brownie, we've handled over the years. He was hot that day. A couple of jacks first time up and then a ball off the wall. We ultimately did walk him to get to Beach, and we're able to get Beach out a little bit later. But that lineup, it's you're danged if you do, danged if you don't with a lot of guys in that lineup. And, you can walk Barthol, but then you got to face Bodie. And, you pitch around Bodie and you can face Brown. Not you don't want Brown, you're going to face Beach, and it's just on and on and on. And the guy that's really making them go, and we got to do next time we play, and we got a better job of keeping this guy off base, is that Antonacci that's leading off for him. He's
right.
A really good player.
It seemed like when y'all threw hard right at him, you had success. Anybody who was trying to, work the corners or beat him with breaking stuff just either couldn't throw strikes or got hit. I mean, kind of was that way over the week through the series.
Yeah, I tell you this, too, about free passes and pitching around guys. You got to watch yourself doing that in that ballpark because in a lot of instances, it's just going to be one more run. if they're able to elevate a ball and just get it in the air. And so you got to be careful doing that stuff. But, yeah, I thought we were pretty successful with hard stuff. The bottom line is getting ahead and counts. And, look, Gunner does a tremendous job calling pitches, and those boys generally execute pitches at a high level for him. And look, it was a tough strike zones too. Now, there were some calls that we're used to getting that we didn't get, and put us behind the eight ball in some counts several times. But they did a good job of staying on the soft stuff, and we did have a relative amount of success with the fastball. I think you got to remove LP from that equation when you look at the success, because he's just different.
He is, but even David, just a freaky pitch. He is, and I'm about to get to him. But David Christie, I know it was the first game you were, but I mean, he came right at him, and he had a lot of success in game one, kind of mopping up there.
He really did. And if you look a year ago, we had to start David on Sunday, and he went six innings again a year ago, and he did the same thing this past outing. And it's relative to who you are. There's so many variables that go into a score. They're up 9-1, et cetera, et cetera. But David's fastball also has sync to it, so he's able to put him on the ground. And, you know, he had a tremendous outing for us.
All right. So you mentioned Langevin, I mean, LP. I mean, that was – I guess you could say it would be better to throw a few pitches and get a few more first pitch outs. But other than that, it was about a perfect performance in that he faced 15 batters. He got them all out on the road against a really, really good hitting team. We saw that the whole weekend, and with 10 strikeouts. I mean, that was just, you know, we use the word masterful sometime and great and all these. That was a masterful appearance.
That was unbelievable, except it was believable because we watched him do it and watched him get better and better in the strike zone. And, hey, it was one pitch. Here you go. Hit it if you can. And he'd sprinkle in a change or a slider. He got Bender on a backup slider one time, I believe, in a 3-2 count. That probably shocked the kid because it was just heater, heater, heater. It's just a special pitch, man. It's a freaky pitch. It's got a lot of fuzz on it, and good luck hitting that thing.
So, like, what are the, like, and let me get to another scenario. At the end of game two, Kyle DeBarge hits a double and cramps up at second base. I'm not really so much about, at that point, I'm thinking, look, you got to win one game. You got to win this game. So what I'm worried about, I'm not worried about him running the bases. I mean, he could just stand at second base because you had the lead at the time. What I'm worried about is him being able to play shortstop. And I'm also worried about it's going to be really hard to get him off the field in that series because he plays every inning, and yet you can't afford to be limited at shortstop. What was going through your mind through that scenario?
Just let's get a banana and some water in him because this cat ain't coming off the field, I promise you that. the greatest part, and I love this about sports, the greatest part about that is I look up right when it happened, and Barthol, the second baseman for Coastal, is stretching his leg for him. And I just love seeing stuff like that. You know, they're bad blood on the field, but at the end of the day, they're all warriors. And you know, it's just that camaraderie of baseball. It was pretty cool to see.
And I don't know, I'm sure you probably, I don't see that too often, bananas being carried out to second base for athletes in the middle of the game.
We got all kinds of stuff going on. John Taylor eats while he's on base. If you ever seen John Taylor reach into his back pocket, he's eating some sort of snack over there or something.
All right, so, look, we went into this series talking about how great a hitting team Coastal have and how great a pitchers y'all have. And at times we saw the great pitching like we talked about with David Christie and Langevin. And at times we saw the great hitting, although Langevin made him look pretty human. And so, I mean, do you kind of come out the series thinking the same way about both teams that you went into it? Or what did you see as the weekend went on?
You know, I really like their offense for sure. And I love our team. And they're, you know, Gilly, their head coach, who's a legend in this business. He's retiring. He had incredibly positive things to say about our boys after the series. And, you know, I like hearing that stuff from peers. I think our team is complete. It's balanced. Bottom line for us is when we don't give stuff away, we win. And, you know, that it just got away from us a couple of times. But we have built up so much equity and house money, if you will. We understand the job we need to do going in. And at the end of the day, we got that done. Now, love 2 out of 3. Love a 2 out of 3. Love a sweep. But to bounce back after game one and do what we did on Saturday, that's the mark of a really tough team and a team that's hard to beat.
All right. So, again, it was like a regional atmosphere. This coming weekend is going to be like a regional atmosphere. And it seems like as long as you get your enough W's and out of those scenarios, that's really going to pay off down the road.
100% it is. And this is the portion of our schedule where you drive some numbers up, but same time you can't play for those things. You just got to go one at a time, man, and play good baseball in each individual game, and start over the next day and do it again. And this team's pretty much been consistent at doing that all year. Now this weekend will be awesome. We're gonna need every single Cajun Nation fan out here amped up, ready to rock and roll. We got alumni weekend. I know we're going to honor the 2014 team. Those boys are so special to me and to this community. It ought to be a crazy weekend. I can't wait. Looking forward to it. We got a Houston Christian team in here on Wednesday. Lance Berkman's big Puma. His team coming in on Wednesday. And then get after it this weekend.
All righty, sir. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll talk to you again later today and Wednesday. Good luck.
All right, have a great day. See you, Kim.
All right, look, we got a lot to get to, but we talked a lot last week about that series. And, again, were there some disappointing aspects of that series? No question. We all said you can't go over there and walk people and make errors. And what did they do the first game? What did they walk, 7 or 8? Walk, made 5 errors and, you know, walked another 8 or 9 in game 3. I mean, it's not easy to figure out why they lost. You can't go to a great hitting team on the road and walk people. Now, Coach Deggs was kind of insinuating that they didn't think some of the walks were walks, but that's kind of baseball sometimes. That and some of that, you know, was, but some of it was just they just didn't throw enough strikes. And they'll play them again in a different, more than likely play them again in a different ballpark, different scenario, and we'll see how that plays out. But again, the most important thing is they won at least one, and they were so close to winning two, just couldn't quite close the door. We'll take a timeout and kind of reset, get into some many other things that happened over the weekend when we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, your home for the Houston Astros.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. All right, so It is, again, we got lots to cover today, like we do on each Monday, especially this time of the year. But I want to revisit something that we said last week that was not real popular of an opinion, but I still think was correct, and now I'm pretty convinced was correct. It was a good loss for the Pelicans to lose to the Lakers. And I think there's no question that they have a much better chance of beating the 1 seed Thunder than they do the 2 seed Nuggets. Now, doesn't mean they're going to win. Look at last night's game. I thought the Pelicans should have won. It's a, you know, could they have won? Of course, probably should have won. I mean, some things happened down the street. Everything, you could just see it unfolding. It was, everything was working out perfectly. The Thunder went through a really good stretch where they were really clicking, but down the stretch, they really weren't clicking. They were taking a few bad shots. They didn't hit a bunch of them. And then just dumb junk started happening. Like, you get a rebound and you throw it to a guy. You're in control. Everything's going your way. You get a rebound in the final few minutes and you throw it to a teammate who's standing out of bounds. And then the officials make that. Again, I don't understand why officials have to do that. Why they did this phantom foul? I mean, it wasn't even close to a foul at the end. They love the end one. Again, that's the stuff about basketball that drives me crazy. Why do officials love to signal the end one call so much? Make sure it's a foul before you do that. That junk drives me crazy. And then you know. He didn't have – Ingram did not have a good game, which is going to happen. But, I mean, what – I don't understand the purpose of standing there in the open court. I don't know. This is, again, in the final 3 minutes when everything was going the Pelicans' way, and he just throws his shoulder to the defender. Like, why do that? I just – that was crazy. Like, they didn't have Zion. Ingram did not have a good game, and they still should have beat the number 1 seed on the road in game one last night. I mean, really, they should have won. They just, too many silly things happened at the end of the game. By the way, I turned it off so I didn't really watch the replays. Was that a 2 or a 3 attempt at the end by CJ? It was a 3? His foot was behind the line, yeah. And I know Dawson hates the man, but I didn't think he hit a tough baseline shot last night on the left baseline to I think it tied the game with, I don't know, 2 minutes to go or something.
I don't hate the man. It was to make it a 1-point game.
It was a big shot.
Yeah, it was a big shot. But again, that's not my point. My point is the shot last night. It was another chance. We could have came in here. I already had my monologue apologizing to him, ready to go, and he missed another one. And I mean, again, you're not supposed to make all of those, but you got to make a couple.
Well,
a couple of them.
But I didn't think it was a very well-designed play.
No, it wasn't.
Play.
Well, I imagine.
He did a good job just to get a shot for a while. I'm like, they're not going to get a shot on.
It was basically the Tamia Robinson play for the Cajuns women's basketball team at Central Michigan, where the ball got kicked around, and then you threw it up at the buzzer, and hers went in. And so we went, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
But it was like, that was nowhere near what the play was supposed to look like. He starts a drive, he gets it kicked around, he picks it up. I mean, again, he did a pretty good job to even get a shot off,
yes.
But
and it was off balance. It wasn't like a great look, but at least he got one off.
No,
he
and again,
went in.
The officiating, it is what it is. But and Antonio Daniels, I love, by the way, that we have local broadcasts for these playoff games in addition to the national, and you can go back and forth if you want. So I watched a lot of the Pelicans side of this as opposed to the national. And the foul call on SGA is the one call of the entire night. And SGA does, by the way, he's one of the, you know, a lot of people in the league who don't watch him often. He's a little James Harden in him. He is a seller of calls, and he leads the league or close to the league in free throws attempted per game. And that wasn't even one of those instances. That was just I don't know what they're, are they anticipating a foul? I don't understand.
That's what
how
they
you
do.
Call
it's
it.
Because they love. It's like they. It's like after the game, they all run into the locker room and they start making their and one calls and they take pictures making their and one call. The and one call. If nothing else, I had to divorce. I just cannot take the and one call.
The funny
like
thing
they
is
just in, make it up.
The funny thing is, college officials are the opposite. Like again, and we've seen this a lot. They will wait to see if a shot goes in, and if it doesn't go in, then they'll call a foul because they're like, well, if the shot's going to go in. It was close enough where we're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. It's weird. But anyway, no. And that's
and the
awful.
Other one was the illegal screen. I mean, again, those were the three plays that caught the throwing the shoulder into him for no reason.
Which,
was
again, though,
stupid.
But again, that throwing the shoulder, that stuff was allowed all night. I mean, they were, and they talked about it. Lou Dort was all over Brandon Ingram all night long. And then in the final 2 minutes, it's officiated differently. And that's the problem. Like, And like they're a great defensive team. And the Pelicans, they didn't call a lot of stuff on SGA that he normally gets with Herb and Trey, who did a really good job, I thought, trying to – but then they call it in the final 2 minutes and they just change their
I
team.
Never saw a replay of the illegal screen.
It was illegal screen, yeah, but that, it was. He had the elbow out, and, I mean, he was moving into him. I thought both of them were fine. They were the correct calls, but it is what it is. They've got to – find ways to hit shots in clutch time, and they don't do it.
But, I mean, again, the illegal screen, the shoulder, and throwing to a man out of bounds, that's three possessions in a game where, all you got to do is score one of those possessions, I think you win the game.
And a missed dunk by Larry Nance is mixed in there too, which, you know, and I was texting about this. If he makes the dunk, we wouldn't even have the conversation. But Jonas, they played Jonas a ton last night. Jonas had 20-something rebounds. And Chet Holmgren does not, and I said it to my buddies, like, Chet Holmgren does not want any part of Jonas Valanciunas in this entire series. He does not want any of them. And they pulled him out of the game for the last six possessions, and they don't work it inside to him. And look, he made some wrong decisions at times during the games. He wasn't perfect. Valanciunas didn't have, like, a game that he's going to put on his highlight reel for his career. But when they really needed something, Holmgren did not want any part of Jonas, and you don't have him out there for any of those. They had four or five chances to win the game in the last 2 minutes, and he wasn't out there for any of them.
But again,
and it just drives me
Ingram
insane.
Did not have a good game, and you didn't have Zion, and you should have beaten the number one seed on the road.
Right, but that does, and I keep seeing people say that. That doesn't mean that game two is going to start in the same situation.
No,
they're not going to play as bad as that for the rest of the series.
I'm just telling you, you're capable of winning this series.
Yeah, but they were. I get that, but not. I don't think they're capable of winning it after what happened last night. That was a game you had to have. You're not going to play well enough to beat that team four times in the next six games without having won that one. When you had the OKC first playoff game nerves, they didn't play well in the first half. You had all that going for you. They're not going to play that poorly the rest of the series. So I'm actually more negative on it than I would be. You had to steal that one, and you didn't.
You still got a better chance than the Lakers, though. You got to admit that.
I mean, the Lakers were up in the second half of that game. I don't know how you get that takeaway from it. Yeah, it's Jokic, and that's the difference, but you were always going to have to beat Jokic. I mean, at some point in the playoffs, so I get your logic. It still was not the right thing to do to lose because you still had to beat the Kings in what was a competitive game without Zion. So,
I think it was the right thing. Now, again, I don't think they were on the court playing to lose. They just didn't win because they don't match up with the Lakers.
I know.
But losing was the best thing, was the point there. So we covered Cajun baseball. Softball didn't play well on Friday night. Or didn't hit well, I should say. And then ended up sweeping the series. All went well. LSU did not get a sweep. They did win their first SEC series. I don't know that it was convincing enough for anybody to think, boy, things have changed now, but you take a series. When you haven't won one, you take it, and you hope that somehow you play better down the stretch. The Astros shoulda, coulda, woulda won a series, but first of all, should have been up by more than two runs. They have got to stop leaving runners in scoring position with less than two outs. When the momentum's going, I mean, it's going to happen sometimes. But when you're struggling and you have a big inning, you got to at least have your big inning. Don't have a good inning, you're trailing. You have a good inning, you take the lead. You have a chance to make it a great inning. and it happened against the Braves during the week, and it happened again Saturday. When you have a chance to have a great inning by simply putting the ball in play, you cannot choke. You have to make it a great inning because there's going to be plenty of innings that aren't going to be great. You got to make hay while the sun is shining. You can't leave a runner at third with less than two outs when you're having a big inning, when you're struggling. You got to capitalize. They should have been up by three or four runs, not two. Just like against the Braves. Yonner came up. They took a 3-2 lead. He had a runners on second and third and one out, and he struck out on a terrible at-bat. You got to make hay while the sun is shining when you're struggling and you're not doing anything right. And they did it. And then Presley has not had one good outing all season. I don't know why anybody thought Presley was going to close that game. I mean, you hope he – Presley has not had one good outing. Now, I'm not saying he didn't have any outings where he gave up any runs, because he did. But most of those were like line drive to center field. Oh, I'm just glad they caught it. He has not had a good inning where he was in control. Baseball got people out. He had nothing to do with it. And so there was no real. He is a mess right now. Is he going to come out of it? I don't know. Like I said last week, my number one biggest concern is Ryan Pressly. He's my number one biggest concern, and nothing else is even close. Because if Ryan Pressly is going to be like this most of all of the year, they're in trouble. If Ryan Pressly can become Ryan Pressly again, they'll be okay. He's the number one biggest concern, and number two ain't close. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles. Your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. All right, what is our poll question of the day?
Yeah, we already talked about it a good bit. Can the Pelicans still win the series despite not stealing game one? The answer choice is yes, no, or only if Zion plays. Because, by the way, there's been starting to have some rumblings that maybe he'll be back sooner than later. I don't know if any of them have any legitimacy behind them. But either way, there's a chance he plays in this series, which I previously thought was pretty unrealistic. But I think the answer is no. Again, I just think you had to steal this game, and you didn't.
If you can win two home games, I think you can win the series.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to, because right now you already lost one road game, so you're running out of games you can lose. But no, I just don't like Oklahoma City played probably one of their worst offensive halves of the season. Now, again, both teams had to get accustomed to the fact that we play playoff basketball in the NBA, which I really enjoy watching, by the way. And the reason people always say college basketball, oh, why do you like college basketball more than the NBA? Because they play like that every night in college basketball. Now, they don't play as well as NBA players by any stretch, but the level of intensity on the defensive end of the floor, that happens in October and November in college basketball games. So that's an aside. But anyway, I just don't see Oklahoma City missing that many open looks the way they did last night the rest of the series.
All right, that's fair.
Now, again, yeah, B.I.'s going to play better, you'd imagine, and yeah, C.J.'s going to hit a few more shots. So that's fair, too. But I just think last night, like, that's the one you're going to look back at. I don't know how you win four games plus that one.
Yeah, they should have won. No question. They should have won. By the way, there were a lot of people nationally, and we didn't really talk about it here locally, but I saw, and I'm not saying it was a wrong opinion or a, like, why, how in the world could they say that? It made sense when you hear it at the time. But I heard a lot of people like, without Giannis, they just don't see how the Bucks can beat the Pacers. I mean, people said that. They just don't see how it could happen. Well, Lillard showed how it could happen.
Okay, I know I'm kind of talking out of two sides of my mouth right here because I just said I don't think the Pelicans can win this series after the game one. I'm hearing way too many people deciding that all these series are over because they're one game to none and, right. And the home team won every game. I'm like, I mean, they're talking on the morning show today, and look, Evan Cohen, friend of the program, we just talked to him last week, but they're already talking about off-season moves because of LeBron and, you know, Luka and Kyrie and all them getting eliminated. I'm like, these series are one to nothing.
No, that's fair. I'm just saying, I think a lot of people had convinced, and I understand why they did.
No, and look, Milwaukee
convinced
looks-
themselves that the Bucks look horrible. They're a complete clown show. And without Giannis, they almost look at him as underdogs, and they crushed him in the first game.
Yeah, that was, I got to watch a good bit of that when leading into the Pels game. That was the least competitive game that I saw over the weekend. And that was crazy, too. And why do people poke the Dame Time thing? Like, has that ever worked out well for anybody when they do the celebration?
Also, a lot of people thought because of the star power that the Timberwolves were in trouble against the Suns. That wasn't real competitive either. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, buddy. I tell you, I listened at a couple of things that you all were saying. And, you know, and I think about you when you talk about what you call cheating, when those plays are being let go all game and all of a sudden when it's crunch time.
That's cheating, yes.
You decide to make that call. And, you know, it's like there's something that Dawson said about the James Harden. I consider CJ probably to be the smartest person on that team when it comes to making decisions. Why he didn't jump into the guy that went off his feet instead of trying to jump around him for a tough shot, I don't understand. That was when he should have done the James Harden move because the guy left his feet. And then you got three free throws to try to win the game instead of a tough shot. So I don't know. I didn't think before the game they had a chance, and I still don't think they have a chance to win the series. But they gave themselves a shot last night.
They could have won. I mean, again, we talked about the three possessions down the stretch that got, you know, two of them were fouls, and one of them was just throwing the ball to a guy out of bounds. I mean, they should have won it. It was all set up for them to win, and it just didn't happen.
And something else Dawson said for me, Valanciunas is, for me, their most consistent player. He should be on the floor. I don't care if you think he's a little bit soft defensively or whatever the reason that you're taking him out. You can get him the ball, and he knows how to make decisions on who to get the ball to.
Yeah, but is he a guy you want there on the last possession? I don't know if he's a last possession kind of guy. He's more of a when you're slowing it down in a half-court kind of situation.
The only reason that you kind of want – well, I mean, not with just a couple of seconds left. You may be right. But when you're talking the last possession, if you got enough time, you want him there because he makes great decisions on who to get the ball to. So – I just think they like we keep saying, they blew a great opportunity.
No question.
A game.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, it's a shame.
All right, that's all I had to say.
Thank you, sir.
All right, come on.
Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine hotline, 706-0111, 706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
You asked the question there, though, and I have your answer. You said, is he the guy on the last possession? But my point is you had five possessions in the last 2 minutes of the game where you could have, for a long time, it was extended a two-point lead, and then it was you were down by one or you were down by three, and none of those possessions had him on the floor. And again, I'm not saying you run every possession through him like he's, you know, LeBron in his prime, but having him out there I just think changes the look. And defensively, for everything we say about his lack of defensive effort, he was fine defensively last night. Chet Holmgren was okay. He had a couple nice moments. Jonas controlled him when he was in there. He rebounded everything. I mean, he kept a number of possessions alive on the offensive. He's the only reason
you
were tied. And so it frustrates me. And then again, now, I like Larry Nance and what he brings. But like you said, Larry Nance gets a big rebound late in the game and just throws the ball out of bounds. And I just think Jonas makes... That was like a, you know what that was to me, and it's crazy. It's like, you know, sometimes you see this when a young player gets in a game in college basketball, not to bring it all back to college, and a player gets a rebound, and they're so excited they got the rebound, and they were in the right spot, and they just want to get the ball out of their own hands.
Yes.
And it's like, but Larry's an 8-year vet. I mean, that's not who he is.
Now, two of the last five possessions ended up were turnovers now, but you probably can make the argument that consider it, maybe if he's in the game, those scenarios don't play out that way. I don't know.
You know what else I've – and I just do a good job of distracting myself from the main point, but we had a number of jump balls last night, probably the most jump balls I've seen in an NBA game
it was
in a long
lot.
Time.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people who just hate the alternating possession in college, and I think you've been kind of mixed on it. I still don't think a better solution is – toss the ball up, and whoever has, like, they have a 7'5" giant on their team, so they're going to win every jump ball we do. And I know sometimes, like, why should another team get the possession because the ball got tied up and their guy happens to be 7 foot tall and a 6'2" guy tied it up on our end, and now they get the jump ball because they have a taller player. Alternating possession takes into account that it's a tie on, you know, both teams have the ball. We're going to, you know, well, you got the last one. This team gets this one.
The jump ball was, I didn't have a good feeling while it was happening, all them jump balls.
Antonio Daniels said it looked like Jonas has no shot to beat Chet Holmgren in a jump ball. And then Joe Myers brought up, a lot of times they don't even throw the ball high enough for it to be a jump ball. Chet just grabs it before it's even in the air.
Right. No, I concur on that. And again, early on in, you know, decades ago, it seemed weird when they went to the alternate possession, but now that it's all these years later, I kind of like it better, I think. I'm with you on that.
The only thing I will say is they call jump balls too often in college when it's not actually a tied-up ball. They don't let it play out, but I guess a lot of that's they don't want, you know, guys starting to throw elbows at the bottom of the piles and stuff.
It just seems to me that there's more traveling that takes place when they're all on the floor. I don't know how some of these don't end up in travels, but that's me. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll be back.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. So you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 706-0111, 706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Again, lots to cover as always on a Monday. We're 3 days away from the NFL draft, so we certainly are going to be talking about that here and there over the next couple of days. We've got the NBA playoffs, lots of college baseball and softball. The Cadets play LSU again tomorrow. Lots going on.
Yeah, I got a couple things for you. One, I won't get on you for the NFL draft this week. You can officially talk about it. I won't get in your way here.
Okay.
I think that's fair. I got an RPI number. I got an RPI stat for you. I mean, I kind of been doing these weekly for you here because I find one or two that just blow my mind every week. There's a baseball one that just, I mean, I don't know how the math works. I'd love for someone to explain to me the math of it. But UNC Wilmington was, they entered the weekend. Let's just give a little quick recap here. They're a pretty good team. They've been good for a while now. They entered the weekend with a 24-13 overall record. And their RPI entering the weekend was 82nd. So they're, you know, they were a team where you're going, you know, they're not really in contention for an at-large bid, right? They're probably going to have to win their conference. They're in the Coastal Athletic Conference. It's not a great league. So we'll see. They played a very good Northeastern team who has also been in and around the NCAA regionals for a while now. And they went on the road and they took 2 of 3. So you figure that's a really nice week for them. And in addition, in the midweek, they beat Wake Forest in a neutral site game, who is a top 20 RPI team. So 3-1 record against 4 good teams, but they were 82nd. Their RPI is now 42. They went up 40 spots in 1 week in mid-April, late April. In the RPI.
Wow.
I don't understand. Again,
like
to this,
how could the rest of their teams on the schedule all play that well?
I don't get it. I don't get it. But now they find themselves squarely in the, you know, regional at-large picture after one weekend. And again, like, they beat Northeastern, who's a good team, but Northeastern's RPI is 40. It's not like Northeastern's a top 10 RPI team. And they got a midweek win over Wake, but plenty of teams have midweek wins over Wake. Wake's got 13 losses this season, you know? So I just, that one blew my mind. But also, by the way, for all the Cajuns RPI stuff, they lost 2 of 3 and they went up 12 spots. They're 43 now. So, as we said, the games against Coastal on the road were going to help your RPI whether you won them or lost.
That's what I've been saying.
And I've been agreeing with you.
But what I've been saying is we need to include all the future opponents now so we're not lying to ourselves about where they are.
Maybe you can come up with the formula and you can get back to us on that.
They do it in high school football. Why can't we do it in college baseball?
I don't know. I'll tell you what a problem is, though, is I've been eyeing down that Georgia Southern series for a long time, and we talked about it. And look, like Jay Walker's been super high on Georgia Southern the whole year. Like, he thinks that's a team that's going to get rolling. And I thought it was an opportunity for a quad one win down the stretch because you play them at their place, which is, you know, again, a big difference. They got swept by JMU, and now their RPI is sitting at 67, and that's no longer looking like it's going to be a quad one opportunity. So that's a tough break.
And you don't play James Madison.
Right, who is now 23rd in the RPI. And that's kind of the way the cookie crumbles here, but that's a tough break.
And you don't play Georgia State. Now, they have a lot more losses, but look, at some point, you can only worry so much. You have to just win series. You know, you just need to make sure that, again, if you don't get swept on the road and you win your series at home, you don't have to sweep everyone. But you win your series at home and you don't get swept on the road, I don't see how they're not going to win the league. Because now, mathematically, you could not win the league, but all these teams are not going to win every game they play.
Well, and that's, again, why the win against Coastal was so massive, because as we talked about, when you play a head-to-head, you went from either losing 3 games out of your lead to only losing 1. It's a 2-game difference, even though it's 1 game result.
Yes, it's a 2-game difference, yes.
Yeah. And then Southern Miss didn't sweep ULM when there was a chance for Southern Miss to pick up 2 on you. They lost Sunday. So you only lost 1 game on your conference lead. Your lead was 5 games. Now it's 4. So, again, unless Southern Miss comes into your place and sweeps you, you're still going to have a 3-game lead at the very worst.
You just need to avoid sweeps. Yes. It's just that simple. It's kind of that simple. But I would stick with the original premise and mentality. And again, that's just something that we talk about. As a player, coach, you need to go out and try to win every
game. Which is also
game.
The difference. I don't. The Pelicans, obviously, we're not focused on that either. But we have the conversation peripherally.
Yes. Don't get swept on the road. Win game series at home, and you're good. 1 hour down, another hour to go.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me feel English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foot.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. And give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Again, we've talked quite a bit of NBA. Our poll question is about the NBA. It essentially is, do the Pelicans still have a chance to win, even though they blew a game one last night on the road? The one thing I'll say, this series, is, from an analysis standpoint, is a little different. And what I mean by that is, normally if you're a road team and you lose, well, that's not a problem. You still got 3 home games left. The problem is, for the Pelicans, road games are basically like home games with just about everybody else. So basically, it's almost like you're the number one, you know, you started out and you lost a home game because the Pelicans are better on the road than they are at home. So it's almost like reverse with them. They're just strange, you know, like the Astros are before this season started, where they can't win a home game. So is anybody else Is everyone kind of negative about the future on the poll question like you, or is anyone still believing in the Pelicans?
It's leading the way. 42% are saying no, they do not. They cannot still win the series. 35% say they can, and then 23% say only if they get Zion back in this series. So I will say, and it was, and they talked about it a lot on the Pels broadcast, Oklahoma City was like a college basketball atmosphere. I'm going to bring this up on our own show, but shout out to the discipline of the fans who all wore the playoff T-shirts. You get a lot of fans who they have their own outfits. They don't want to wear the free T-shirt. The Thunder fans were like, we're wearing the T-shirts. We're not wearing what we wore to the ballpark here. We're going to wear, or to the stadium arena. Let's try that.
I'm not a big wear the T-shirt guy, I got to tell you.
You're not going to wear the T-shirt that they put on the shirt, on the chair?
I guess I would if I was a fan. I'm not a, not into that, but yeah.
Anyway. The other thing I was going to say, though, is I do have hope that the Pelicans can change it in the playoffs because, like with the Astros we talked about before, I think it's the most – it's the sport where it's you're playing baseball and the crowd can certainly influence it, but the crowd is not making a lot of noise. I don't know. I think the crowd influences the game the least in baseball, even though playing at home influences it more for most teams, not the Astros, because, again, the ballpark, the surroundings, the batter's eye, things of that nature – I have hope that the Pelicans will have an atmosphere in the Smoothie King Center that is different than the play-in games because, again, by the way, there was some real play-in fatigue and there was not this desire. And they also charge season ticket holders to go to the games, which, like, you have to. Everybody does it. But there was a lot of season ticket holders who I think were like, I know some who were like, I'm not buying tickets to the play-in game. They weren't supposed to be here. If they get to the playoffs, I'll buy my tickets to the playoff games.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have hope that there will at least be enough of an atmosphere. Excitement about playoff basketball, the Thunder not being one of those teams like the Lakers who have fans everywhere who will show up and kind of mitigate some of it. Like, it should be a legitimate home court advantage. So I have hope that they can win, you know, turn around some of their home blues because of that.
That is very reasonable. Also, you know, we talked a little bit about the Bucks and the Timberwolves. You don't think the Timberwolves have what it takes? Boy, the Timberwolves on paper look good.
Yeah, no, I mean, they
Why can't the Timberwolves be what the Nuggets were last year?
That's a good point, and it also leads to what we talked about with Evan Cohen. You may have heard us on Friday when we talked about the draft, and again, I really appreciated the kind of differing perspectives where he said, why are the Saints not looking at quarterback? And I said, well, they don't ever do that. And he said, so the reason they're not going to is because they haven't before. And then the answer to that is, well, that's going to be the answer until that's not the answer anymore, until they change their mind. And that's the idea of what the Nuggets did last year.
They're not in position to, you know.
It's a different conversation.
Yeah, okay.
You could go back and listen to the interview. It's archived on our website. You can hear the whole thing.
The other thing that stuck out to me is in the first round of the playoffs, and again, I was – following the Cajuns and covering softball and watching baseball, and I certainly didn't see a lot of it, but I saw a decent amount. The thing, even with them, if Embiid is healthy, does anybody really think the Sixers wouldn't have beat the Knicks? And even with Embiid going down and struggling in the second half, if Josh Hart, who's not exactly Damian Lillard from three-point land, if Josh Hart doesn't hit not one, two threes, long threes, I think the Sixers still beat the Knicks in New York.
And again, and like you said, it's a road game for them. It was a stolen game situation. They're fine. I still would like the Sixers to win that series. I definitely would.
But he's got to play some. I mean,
and it's gonna be really difficult. Now, like again, Milwaukee might have this. I don't know if you want to call it pseudo-advantage, and I thought about this for the Pels, too, especially if they'd have stolen last night's game, which is why it's so frustrating. You get a player back mid-series. Like, last night's game for the Pelicans, and that's why I had the thought, it was a grind of a game. Again, like, the defensive intensity, and guys like Lou Dort for the Thunder and Herb Jones for the Pels and Trey Murphy are going to make the legs wear for SGA and Brandon Ingram and all those guys. And if you get this piece back in the middle of the series that doesn't have all that fatigue on him, I think it could be an advantage. Again, you have to win a couple games for it to even matter and for Zion to be back, but I wonder if Milwaukee's going to have that too, where you can get through a series potentially and then get Giannis going. It could be helpful for the rest of the way.
But don't you think, as good as they are defensively, I'm not saying I would expect that the Thunder would have one or two really good shooting games, but if they get to game 5, 6, and 7, they should have a pretty good way of shutting, pretty good idea of how to limit them offensively by then, because they're such a good defensive team.
Who, the Pelicans?
Yes.
Yeah, but I just think SGA is one of the guys who you can write down 25 before the game starts. It's just a matter of how he's going to get to it, and those types of teams are tough. Like, B.I. doesn't have, like, last night, what did he have, 12? I mean, there's games where he just doesn't have it.
He looked terrible. But when again, that's going to happen, I guess, here and there. And
right.
He still should have won. Again, that's just...
But that's my point. When SGA's off, he's still finding a way to put up 25. He's a different category of guy right now. And I don't know if people... If you don't know the numbers on him, because I know, a lot, again, there's a lot of NBA fans, myself, somewhat
included.
How much
of that is official aided?
No, I mean, he gets more calls than anyone in the league. He has... And that's part of the reason. He has studied the art. He has grown up under the James Harden school of manipulating officials, and he is tactical with what he does, the places he puts his body in. Now, occasionally, officials still fall for it when they shouldn't, like last night. But
yeah, that was awful.
He's going to get 25 every game of this series, just about, unless something really miraculous happens.
Yeah, that part is certainly frustrating. All right, so... Again, if you want to talk about UL baseball, UL softball, LSU baseball, any of the stuff that happened collegiately, certainly feel free. In a NFL draft-wise, I've heard all of the talk, and I think I'm not buying most of the what they're trying to doubt. I mean, are you like me at the point where you've pretty much convinced yourself that Jaden Daniels is going to Washington, or do you think there's some? I think over the weekend I was kind of going back and forth, but over the weekend I'm like, they're picking Jaden Daniels. Like, why are we overthinking this?
Yeah, I think they're picking him.
Okay, so the next question is, do you believe that the Patriots are going to take Drake May? I'm not nearly as convinced on that one yet, though.
No, I still think there's a J.J. McCarthy possibility there. But I think they've the other thing is, and I heard, and we talked a little bit about this with Evan, like, we don't know what this Patriots regime is now. Like, Belichick's been making the calls forever, you know, as far as we know. So we really don't have a lot to base. Now, we can look at the roster and say it's obvious they need a quarterback, and even if there was some hope that they still liked Mac Jones, they made that clear when they got rid of him. So they need one. The only possibility is that they take one of the approaches that I've talked about before, which is going, hey, we're not even good enough to have the quarterback right now. Let's worry about the rest of our roster. But I still think defensively, like we talked about, they were pretty good. And
yeah, they're still good enough defensively.
So I think they have to take one. Yeah, I would think it's May or McCarthy. I don't think anybody else factors in.
The problem with either one of those... If you're the Patriots. Now, again, there's long-term. Long-term is long-term. And if they say, look, our long-term deal, we're not just worried about this year. We're worried about 2 and 3 and 4 years down the road, and that's fine. You need a quarterback, get one. I get it. But Drake May is not the kind of quarterback who's going to make something out of nothing. You know, a guy like Jaden Daniels can run. He can maybe make something out of nothing. And if you got nothing, Drake May is not going to play well because you got nothing for him to play well with.
Yeah, but I would say May is way more athletic than the guy that was previously in that spot, which is Mac Jones.
Yes.
Way more
That's
athletic.
Fair, yes.
And he does have a little bit of that escapability in him. I think the other opportunity, if the Patriots aren't to end up with either May or McCarthy on their roster, I think the reason would be that they trade down somewhere in the first round because they like a guy like Penix or somebody we're not talking about more than the rest of the draft. But I'd still be shocked. I just don't know if you could play around like that when you're in this situation, you know?
It just still boggles my mind, and I get why they're doing it, that picking the best player on the board is no longer an option for teams. Think about it. Like, who's the best? But what doesn't matter who we think is the best player. We can't pick him because we have to pick a quarterback. Let's just pick the best player. Oh, no, we can't pick the best player on the board because we have to have a quarterback.
Well, because – and I get it to an extent. And it's not an exact science, but the way that is that, A, I think enough data, even if Kevin Foote's brain's not going to allow this to be a possibility. Enough data tells us you have to be close to elite at that position to have a good chance to win a Super Bowl. 90% of them. I did the numbers. We did a whole exercise on it. Tell you have to have a guy who's great at that spot. And then the other thing about it is, with the way the rookie slotting contract-wise is, it's really, really, really hard to get one that you don't draft. Because, and the Saints just did it with Carr, right? Like, that's, and the Falcons are going to try it with Cousins. There's a couple opportunities. It's possible. And the Saints did it with Breeze years ago, but that was also before the era of the way that the fifth-year options work and all those things with the draft. It's almost impossible. It sucks, too. It's a catch-22 because you can't, A, it's less than a 50% proposition that your first-round pick's going to work, but B, there's not really another way to get one unless you get just miraculously lucky with one of these crazy late-round
flyers. I don't
think
that's a miracle. Well, that part is a miracle, but getting a free agent is not a miracle.
But I'm saying getting the free agent and still having a roster good enough to win because of how much you have to pay free agents if they get to that point.
But look, I understand what the Texans did last year, and I'm one that says that the NFL – there's no such thing as a three-year project in the NFL. You can turn it around in 1 year. Like, it happens, and the Texans are a prime example. But do you not think that the Patriots have the worst roster and it's not close? At least on offense. Now, again, their defense is actually was pretty competitive because it's hard to play defense when you have zero offense, zero. But, man. There's some awfully good receivers for a team that never has a receiver, ever. Like, other than Randy Moss, even when they were winning Super Bowls, they didn't have great receivers. And there are three pretty special receivers out there, including one that every expert's already got in the Hall of Fame. Like, they already sizing Marvin Harrison's jacket if you listen to these people. I mean, it's unreal what they say about this guy. And they're not going to pick him because, you know, he's got to have a quarterback.
Well, so again, then maybe if you get real – let's remember how Houston pulled off what they did is getting really creative. And if you're New England, you could try and slot yourself down a few slots, get the quarterback plus one of the receivers if you end up getting out. But it just – again, like it's such a risk to take that. The Texans had a really, really unique situation where they were able to get the guy they wanted plus the other guy without sacrificing the initial guy they wanted.
Right.
The Patriots would be, now look, maybe again, maybe to them Penix is better than May anyway, but they would have to be sacrificing the chance that that guy's not there when they go down to get it. So it's not really the same thing.
Well, they wouldn't be doing it for May, I don't think. They right. would be doing it, like you said, probably for Penix. And again, let before I make that point, it's time for a timeout. So let's take a timeout, and I want to kind of get to that point about the quarterbacks and potentially sliding when we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
Welcome back to Footnotes. Again, you're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. We're talking a whole lot more NBA than we normally do. It's playoff time. And, you know, to Dawson's point earlier, it's just there's a lot on the line. There's a finality to it. I even got Michelle watching a little NBA playoff action with me.
Speaking of which, did she see the new Broncos uniform? Did you see the new Broncos uniform?
I saw the supposed prototype yesterday. They supposedly came out at 10 o'clock today.
Yeah, they did. And I actually love them, except they didn't put any stripes on the helmets. I just think a helmet without a stripe looks naked to me. But
I have not seen. I saw like the supposed computer guess last week, but I didn't see the actual at 10 o'clock. No.
Yeah, they look good. They basically took what they had. And again, the Broncos were stuck in this, you know, early 2000s template that the Patriots had for so long, the Cardinals had for so long, that was just outdated. And they took, I think, essentially, you know, they kept everything about their identity, but they modernized the styling. So I'm a fan, not to be too into the technicalities of it.
So, no. By the way, we've got a nickname. She's already got a nickname for Alvarado. We call him, and just watching a few games here, the playing game, Spunky. So we'll say Spunky just hit a three. So I don't know. We just enjoy nicknames, I guess. All right. So I want to get back to the NFL. And certainly, if you want to call about the NBA playoffs, certainly feel free, or Cajun baseball, LSU, whatever. But here's the point that I want to get to. When I actually, because we have, I say pen to paper, and what I mean by that, it's one thing to have an idea of how you think things might go, but when you actually sit down and do a mock draft, even if you don't complete it, you just go through the process, it can change your perspective on things a little bit. And here's what it did for me when I first made a first attempt at trying to do it. There's all this talk about quarterbacks, okay? And I think it's very possible there's going to be four quarterbacks picked in the top six or seven picks, depending on the trade up prospect. But listen to this. After the Saints pick, I'm going to rattle off a long list of teams. Stop me when you hear someone that you really think is going to draft a quarterback without, again, is it possible someone's going to trade back into the first round? Yes. But if they don't, it's way more possible that these other quarterbacks like Penix and Nix are going to drop to the second round unless no one trades up. After the Saints, Colts, I don't think they'll pick a quarterback. Maybe Seattle, but I don't think they'll pick one. Jaguars, no. Bengals, no. Maybe the Rams, just for the future, but not for this year. Steelers, no. Dolphins, no. Eagles, no. Vikings pick 23rd, and I don't even think they'll have that because they would have already have probably traded up for one. So I don't think the Vikings would, unless whoever the Vikings trade with, say the Giants or the Cardinals, decide to. But that's a very iffy. Cowboys, no. Packers, no. Bucks, maybe, but I don't think so because they seem to have settled on Baker. Cardinals, no. Bills, no. Lions, no. Ravens, no. Cheaters, no. Chiefs, no. So when you actually do it, after the Saints pick, or I should say after the Raiders pick at 13, unless they trade up, I think it's very possible, unless someone trades back into the first round, none of these teams after 13 I think are going to pick quarterback, unless, again, someone trades back into the first round, i.e. Broncos. Like, could the Broncos make a pick at 12, like Brock Bowers or an edge rusher? And then trade back to get Nix or Penix. That could happen. I could see the Giants making a pick where they are and then trading back into the first round. That's it, really. I don't see these other teams. I mean, I guess the Patriots, like we were just saying, if they decided to pick Marvin Harrison, the best player on the draft, on the board at the time, and then trade back into the first round. But I don't really see any of these teams after 13 picking a quarterback in the first round unless someone trades back into the first round. So, and you know, along that line, I saw one of the big NFL ESPN draft guys. He had Knicks going all the way to the second round, and that could be important for the Broncos because they need a quarterback, but they also may not want to pick one at 12. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's head back out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
Kevin, that's definitely what's going to happen. You will have somebody trading back into the first round to get that quarterback. They're going to have an extra year on an option, a fifth-year option on these quarterbacks.
Do you think the Rams pick your future quarterback at 19?
I hope they don't do it at 19. I'm kind of hoping what I just said happens, where they can trade back up to the second round, to get up to back into the first round at the end and try to do something there. They need a defensive tackle. Now, if they go ahead and it's going to be Penix, who they're going to want, because that would be the top of quarterback to run to make Vegas offense. I would see that, but, man, if they do that at 19, I'm not saying they're giving up on this year, but I don't think they'll be a good thing. Kevin, let's talk a little bit about college baseball. One quick thing. Remember how we were talking about that Connor Cup? Is he ready for the big moment? He sure looked like he was ready for the big moment this weekend, didn't he?
Boy, you know, it's so funny because I watch games all the time, but I'm watching them from the press box. And when you watch it on TV, it's such a different perspective. He looks so much bigger on TV than he does watching games live from the press box. I mean, he looks huge at the plate. So, yeah, he definitely looked the part. Yes, sir.
And look, going back to the NBA, you know, Kevin, all the home teams won the first round. You know what? I think that's all a lot of fool's gold. You know, a lot of these teams, like Dallas, rested a lot of their players. You could see they were very rested. You know, all these teams. I mean, even Indiana was probably a lot rested. They were resting players. It's very fool's gold to go at these first round games to think that everything is going to stay chalk these second games. I guarantee you. Well, how many games? They had 8 games in the thing. The next round, the next set of games, 4 of them road teams are going to win out of them 8 games. Just watch what I'm telling you, because. You know, the adjustments are going to be made, and the rust is going to come up.
Okay, which one you think is the most likely to win?
Indiana. Indiana, Dallas. Those two right there, and the Lakers. I'll give those 3 teams are going to be 3 the possibilities that are going to win the second game of all them series right there. It's just, you know, look, I'm a Bucks fan. You know, look, I know they're going to be holding Giannis as much as they can, you know. Trying to go play with house money to whatever games he sits down, they don't play. And then when the Bucks finally lose, he's probably going to be playing after that. But that's going to be one. I have a feeling the Lakers are going to be another one, and Dallas is going to be another. 3 of those teams, and there's going to be another one along with that. Just watch you see, buddy. Have a good day.
All right, take care. And again, FedEx Man's a Bucks fan. I don't know. I think 4 is possible. Look, for some of them, it wasn't so much that the teams won, but, like, the Mavs got crushed, too. A lot of these teams got crushed. And I think that it wasn't so much that they won, it was that they crushed them, and that's what's deceiving the perception. But, again, every time I think about this, I think of early 80s, Boston Massacre. Lakers went and got beat by 40 or whatever it was, and they ended up winning the series. So, certainly. I mean, his point is well made in that just because you win by a lot of points, especially in the first game, because most series, even if they go 6 or 7, most series has at least one game where, and sometimes more than one game, where a team just completely blows the team out. And if you're just watching that game, you're saying, well, that team's way better than the other team, and you know, but it doesn't always mean that they're going to win more games in the series. See 1960 World Series. That's another prime example that always comes to my mind. But no, I think that's a good point. And so we'll. But nationally, again, a lot of people were picking the Pacers to beat the Bucks, and a lot of people, almost everyone I heard, was picking the Mavs. In fact, I heard a lot of people think that the Mavs were going to win in 4 or 5 games. And they might still, but they got a lot of work to do to win in 5 games. A lot of people were picking the Mavs, and a lot of people were picking the Pacers. And so there's a lot of, we'll wait and see. But no, that's a good point. It'll be interesting to monitor how that goes. All right, we'll take a timeout. Be back.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN, 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. Again, if you would like to get us on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water, certainly feel free to call. We've talked a lot of NBA. We've talked in NFL draft. It's only 3 days away. Look, it is a lot going on college-wise and professionally right now, and even high school. I mean, we didn't really talk much about it, but we've got teams going to the state softball tournament this weekend. We've got a bunch of best-of-3 series going on. The high school district track meets were all last week. The regional meets are coming up this week. So lots going on at all the different levels for sure. Let's head back out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Excuse me. A previous caller said who can win game two?
He said the Lakers are going to win.
Who?
He predicted the Lakers to beat the Nuggets in game two.
Lakers not going to beat the Nuggets, man. They won't beat the Nuggets if they don't get more from the role players. And everybody making it about LeBron. At this stage, LeBron needs all hands on deck. He and AD can do their thing, but Russell can't go 1-for-9, and Reeves have to show up early and get a rhythm early to continue through the game. And Hachimura got to give him more. And they got to stop. You understand me? They have to stop depending on Hachimura to be able to guard Joker. And that's not going to work. You put your big gun on Joker. If you get in foul trouble, well. But you have to ride with that. You can't keep sticking Hachimura on him and expect good results like that. You know, I mean, apparently he haven't learned from the last year's series, though. That's not going to work. He's just too small. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he has to use Jackson Hayes a little bit more, and you combine him with AD to kind of like try to wear Joker down some kind of way. But you're not going to beat them and discourage them with Hachimura. And Russell got to hit at least three or four threes in game two, at least. He and Reeves. If you go 1-for-9 again or whatever, they're not going to beat him. I don't care what LeBron does. LeBron could go for 40. You understand tonight? He and AD both. That's not going to get it done, though. You need the other guys to contribute like they was doing the last half of the season. You know, I want to see D'Lo do the ice in his vein thing the way he was doing against the Pelicans. You see, against the Pelicans, it didn't mean that much. It was a playing situation. But now I want to see you do that against the big dogs. You was doing it against the Pel. You're running down court and everything when you hit a little big shot. But where are those big shots at when we really need them? You know what I'm saying? We ain't got
I hear you.
If you don't show up consistently, go ahead.
No, I hear you. So I want to hear this. We also feeding off of what FedEx Man said. Which two teams that lost in game one do you think are most likely to win game two?
I think the Mavericks are going to win game two, especially if Kawhi don't play, if you're not 100%. And the Pacers got a chance because Rick Carlisle is a good coach. So I know he's going to adjust and do his thing and make sure they play a different game and stuff like that because they're pretty fast, but they take too much fast shots. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, they want to play real, real fast and everything, but they take a lot of bad shots when they play like that. So, I mean, you can play fast, but you got to make sure you're taking good shots when you're playing fast. But they're taking all kind of crazy shots and stuff. That ain't going to beat the Bucks even without Giannis. You know, they want to outscore you. They're kind of weak on defense and stuff, but they have to take better shots if you go play fast. You can't just play a fast game and take it wild shots.
That ain't how you win in the playoffs. Yeah, that is not a recipe for success.
So, I mean,
no, you're right.
In the Pel game, the Pel should have had that game. Oh. And that's why I keep saying, I'm going to say it again. Last night was a perfect example. They need a point guard, man. Jose does his thing. He's a spark and everything. But last night, did I have that point guard in there to make sure the right person get their hand with that last possession or two they had? Because they had a couple, they had three or four shots at the basket on one possession,
yes.
And they didn't make no shots.
Yeah,
none.
No, that was tough.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Because the ball wound up in the wrong people's hands sometimes. And I'm like, they need to get that guy that can settle them down right there in that point of the game. Because if they had that guy, he would have made sure the ball wound up in the right person's hand. It should have been in Ingram's hand, but Ingram kind of gets scatterbrained when you got to do too much, and the defense is funneling to him.
Right.
And then, I mean, you know, it's just out of whack. You need a point guard to make them get the right shot. If they'd have had that last night, they would have steal that game like that because they outplayed the Thunder.
Oh, no, they should have. They should have won.
Had a hell of a game.
Yeah.
A hell of a game without a shooting.
Well, they lost. Yep. We'll see what happens.
You know?
Well, you're right.
Later, man.
All right. Take care. No, they again, we went over that in the first hour. It just was a tough loss. They should have, woulda, coulda won, and they didn't. And we'll see if they can follow up on that. But again, it was so strange because it's not like they played great and they just should have won because they played great. Again, they were playing without arguably their best player, and their next best player played poorly. So, essentially, they were playing without their two best players, and they still should have won and didn't. So, it wasn't like they played their best game. They didn't put their best foot forward, but they should have won without it. hoping that they still had their best foot, to, you know, a better game to play in the future. That would, you know, can you imagine if they had won the game that, you know, people, it would be feeling like you're going to win the series. But again, series are just totally different than regular playing. It's just, it becomes a chess match. And series are just very different. And it just seems to me like as a series goes on, defenses should have the edge because you should figure out how to defend people better. And the Pelicans are a really good defensive team most of the time. So that part should play into their hands a little bit here.
I don't mean to harp on the Valanciunas thing. I think that's the key to winning this series. I really, really do. And they're gonna. And I know they talked about the doubles, and that was the end. They're going to double him, and he's got to make the right decisions. But again, I think he does a pretty good job of that. Like, go back to their game against the Spurs. This was a game that they lost, one of, you know, the one that we're kind of lamenting, April 5th. Wembanyama, who is even more gifted than Chet is, and now maybe Chet's had a little more time to put on some muscle to at least somewhat try to combat a guy like Jonas, who's just put together. In that game, Jonas had 26 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds, 10 of 12 from the field. Like, Wembanyama didn't have any chance to stop him. And that's, I just think it's a matchup that he took 9 field goals last night. He was 5 of 9. He scored in double figures. He had 20-something rebounds. I would have him taking 15 shots. I'd be working it into him. I would force the Thunder to make that adjustment. And again, you're going to get a lot of open looks from the outside. And I think you're going to get even more space for Brandon Ingram if you do that. But it just, Willie Green does not, there is something in the DNA of what Willie wants to do as a coach that doesn't line up with how Jonas plays. And I don't think that's changing. And by the way, for Jonas too, I will have the utmost respect for him the rest of his career. The amount of professionalism, and we've asked Ollie about this, like he still shows up ready to go, even though he knows a lot of times he's going to play 6 minutes in four of the first six and then never play again. And he shows up locked in every time. And that's really difficult to do.
Yes. And again, I understand why he doesn't play sometimes, like you're saying. But you have to identify the times that he can be an advantage and utilize it better. And I think that's part of your point as well. This is one of those times, it seems like. So we'll see how they play. Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine hotline, 706-0111. All right. So the whole idea of, you know, let me sleep on it, that's kind of, you know, we've been talking and thinking about the draft and all that, and the weekend kind of got distracted by college baseball and the NBA playoffs, and then you wake up on Monday morning, you're like, man, the draft is just 3 days away now. We've been kind of thinking about it. Some of us have really been thinking about it and talking about it on the air, off the air, for a while now, but now that it's only 3 days away, it's kind of like, all right, a lot of this talking we've been doing, how much of it really makes any sense? And so how much, when you sleep on it, like before you got to make a big decision, you went, let me sleep on it and see how I feel in the morning. And so, again, I'm just done with the trying to second guess. If Raymond's little team picks someone other than Jaden Daniels, then I'm just going to be surprised. I'm not going to spend any more time trying to debate that because I'm just convinced that that's what they're going to do, and so I'm not going to overthink it. But along that line of thinking, have you changed your mind at all on what you think is going to be there for the Saints and what the Saints are going to do? Because I just think it's very possible that three tackles are not going to be there.
I don't see that. I don't see that being the case. I think they're going to be fine.
And look, here's the key. If you're the Jets, you put all your eggs in the Aaron Rodgers basket. So you're telling me after that cat got hurt in, what, the fourth play or whatever it was of the season last year and missed all of last year and you went through another miserable season and you spent the whole offseason picking up all these new weapons and Mike Williams and all this stuff, you're telling me that with the 10th pick, after everything they went through, the Jets are going to pick a luxury pick and they're not going to pick an offensive lineman? Like, how can you not protect this 40-year-old guy that you put all your eggs in that basket?
Before you explode, there's three of them. We just said three. There's I do.
Well,
think
the Titans are taking one. The only way they don't take one is if somehow they are the team that somebody trades up to. The Titans are taking one. Okay, so you're telling me that you really believe the Jets are not going to protect Aaron Rodgers?
There's a chance they will. I don't know if you're locking it in key that the Titans have a lot of needs all across the board. I get that it would make a lot of sense for them too. But again, okay, if all three of them are gone, that means there's somebody else who's really, really high on somebody. Like there's some skill position players that are like unpass upable. If three of them go.
Well, Brock Bowers.
Right.
Unless one of the three receivers aren't taken, but well, they're going to all be taken.
Do the math. I mean, with all the quarterbacks and receivers and all the other positions that are going to be taken, then if that's not the case, then you're going to get the best defensive player in the whole draft. Like,
well, but do you even...
There's only 13 teams that pick in front of the Saints.
I'm not saying you can't use them, but who's going to... Which one would you take?
You'll figure it out. What I'm saying is,
edge rusher.
If three tackles plus four quarterbacks plus three receivers, like you're running out of picks in front of the Saints. Something's going to be there that's exciting.
It's going to be tight end or defense.
I don't, and
that's if the tight end isn't picked, because that guy I still think is.
I think you're worrying yourself too much here.
Too potential much of an impact for someone not to pick him.
I think you're worrying yourself too much here. Again, there's only you're like adding in teams in there. There's only going to be 13 in front of the Saints. There's not anybody else.
The Bears are not going to protect their rookie quarterback.
I'm telling, even if they do,
the Jets are not going to protect Aaron Rodgers and the Titans and that's three. And that doesn't even include the Raiders, who may pick one, and it doesn't include the Chargers, who may pick one. Although I don't think they're gonna. No?
You're adding in, okay, but again, if all of those teams do that, then there is someone who is falling that it should be a top five level pick that's there. So you're going to be okay if that happens.
If it's Brock Bowers?
Yeah, that's great. I would love it. I would throw a party. We're going to have a whole 30-minute celebration on
Monday
morning. If that happens.
I mean, again, I'm
okay.
Oh,
well, no, Friday morning.
Yeah, did I say Monday?
You did.
Yeah, I meant Friday. Friday morning. Just bet I'm okay if it's boring. It just better not be a wake scenario. I just can't take it right now, especially with the Astros losing every game they play. All right, we'll take a timeout. Go ahead.
The last thing I'll say is there was a lot of people in Detroit having a wake the Friday after last year's first round, and they did okay.
Well, they got way too much criticism for what they did. No, but they picked a running back. People love that. That's a splash pick.
Yeah, but there's also enough people now that are on the analytics train that I feel like there's a lot of people that loved it and most people hated it.
That's fair. We'll take a timeout and be back.
Let your voice be heard. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. So speak your mind and call the hotline. 337-706-0111. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN, 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Now, look, you brought up or referred to a point last segment. There's the game of the draft / the nervousness and the fun of the draft. And then there's real life. Like, just because you're really angry on the day after the draft, or the day of the draft, doesn't mean that it's gonna not work out well. There are a lot of examples. You remember, we're all lamenting Ryan Ramczyk being injured now. When the Saints picked Ryan Ramczyk, what's his name, the linebacker from Alabama, everyone was just convinced that's who the Saints were gonna pick, that we're gonna pick this linebacker from Alabama. I don't know why I'm not thinking of his name right now. And he ended up going to the Cheaters, I think, that got him. And he ended up doing nothing. And the Saints picked a safe pick in Ramczyk, and until he got hurt, he was a really good pick. You know, we were talking about, you know, him, how he bailed the Saints out his first 2 years here. For me, anyway, had the Saints. You know me and quarterbacks, I hate them. And so, like, I hate them in the first round. And especially when all the rumors were coming out that the Saints were going to pick Patrick Mahomes at 11 that year. Yeah, Foster, that was his name. The Saints were going to pick Mahomes that year because so say, and it's been confirmed that Genius fell in love with Mahomes, and now we kind of see why he kind of fell in love with Mahomes. Mahomes wasn't the number one pick, and he wasn't the second pick, and he wasn't the third pick. Mahomes went 10th, and only because the Chiefs traded up, and you say, well, the Chiefs are just geniuses. Well, the story now came out that a year before they tried to trade up for Paxton Lynch, who was a complete bust. And had they done it, they probably wouldn't have even done it. Pick Mahomes. So think about it. That doesn't mean they're geniuses. It's like, oh, the Patriots were geniuses. Well, they passed on Brady with their first pick in the sixth round when they drafted Brady. They weren't geniuses. They were just lucky. But no, and obviously I would have been crushed had they not picked that's day one because the Saints needed a cornerback bad. If they had picked Mahomes, of course, I would have been real happy a year or two later. So I get that just because you're upset on draft night or the day after doesn't mean things are going to go that way. You know, could be great. Or if you're happy, they could be total bust. They could end up being total bust. But I tell you what, if the Saints pick Brock Bowers Thursday, if he's a bust, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's still going to be very difficult for me not to say that was worth it. I mean, it's just, I'm such a big tight end guy. All right, got three more days. Y'all have a good one.